In association with Newsarama, welcome to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. With stories like Infinite Crisis and 52, writer Geoff Johns has been one of the guiding voices of the entire DC universe. Now, past his involvement with the wide-ranging crossover events, Geoff can focus on his personal monthly books. But that's no small task. There's Green Lantern, his Superman run on Action Comics co-written with film director Richard Donner, the new upcoming Booster Gold series co-written with Jeff Katz and drawn by Booster's original creator Dan Jurgens, and the Justice Society of America, currently in the midst of a Justice League crossover co-written with Brad Meltzer. We'll talk about all of these projects, along with some movie business Geoff has in the works, and look back at 52, the Blade television series, and as usual, Geoff's general thoughts on the DC Universe. Word Balloon is brought to you by MailOrderComics.com. Today's comics at yesterday's prices. If you've liked them before, check them out today. They've got all new 75% discounts on your pre-ordered new releases and more 50% discounts than ever before. That coupled with their unmatched ordering system and the best customer service to be found yet. Mail Order Comics wants to be your subscription service for all your comic book and related items. Every month you'll enjoy standard discounts of 38% on large press and up to 38% on all small press publishers. They've added double the specials with discounts of 50% or more. That's right, twice as many DC, Image, and Marvel monthly specials. Plus, they like to allow the chance for collectors and comic enthusiasts to try new titles without paying a lot. For all the details, go to mailordercomics.com. This conversation with Geoff was recorded at the close of 52. In fact, issue 52 had just come out the week before, so that's where our conversation begins. Now that it's out, have you gotten any feedback? And then what do you think of the response to the book? I enjoyed it, and I really think you guys did a great job in living up to the hype, and it was this very full story that I do look forward to going back and rereading, because as you said in your interview with Vanetta, there's so many details and so many little stories that are going to be fun to go back and check up on.
I'm really proud of the work we did, and obviously I think, you know, we've been beating it to death by now, but working with the other three guys, that was a highlight by far. And I'm really happy, even myself, with going back and looking through the series and seeing how things came together and how they changed. And you know, that you say, did it live up to the hype? And the funny thing is, when we first announced it, people were like, this is never going to make it 52 weeks in a row. So I don't know if we lived up to the hype or destroyed the negative hype behind it, or the negative, you know, comments that they thought we couldn't do it. And that's something I'm really happy with, is that I think we set out what we wanted to do, and I'm proud of the final product.
Dan said that there were potential books that were in the works based on some of the storylines in 52 that didn't happen. Can you point to any characters either that didn't happen, or if you don't want to do that, even point to ones that expanded much bigger than maybe what you guys initially thought?
Well, the that's a great question, and a difficult one to answer, because there's been so much talk over the course of the book about what characters would spin out. Would there be a Steel book, and that morphed into an Infinity Inc. book that they want to do, and would there be, you know, is there going to be a Booster Gold book or Black Adam monthly or a miniseries? And a lot of it was a question book, you know, a Batwoman book. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen? And I think a lot of it is, you know, they're still talking about some of it, and then some of the other things are in the works. But I couldn't say for sure whether there was an Animal Man book slated and then taken off the schedule. I don't think that was ever the case.
Okay.
You know, but there were a lot of, you know, there's a lots of talking still, I think, about what characters, you know, a lot of the characters I do know they have plans for, and what characters they're going to follow through with those plans and continue off, or a spin-off book, I guess, or, you know, or launch a new title. You know, Jeff Katz and I on Booster Gold, like, you know, there couldn't be I don't think there will ever be a better launching point in history for a Booster Gold book. I just don't think it's going to happen. And so we're working really hard to make sure that this one, you know, it's the best possible Booster Gold book we can do, we're capable of doing. And I hope people enjoy it. We're working really, really hard on it, because we know that all this momentum and all the eyes on Booster Gold are ours to lose. And Booster Gold really has a shot, I think, at being a very, you know, he already is a viable character in the DC Universe, and hopefully a solo viable character in his book.
Well, and I would say his and Elongated Man's arcs were among my favorites in 52, and it was so much fun seeing them go through the anguish and just the weirdness that the way the Booster Gold series started, where all of a sudden he seemed to be the old Booster Gold, the one that kind of showed up in the early 80s. And you were almost wondering, okay, maybe it's a time paradox. Maybe this is an older Booster Gold, and that's, you know, why he's being so dickish, for lack of a better word.
Again, as I said earlier, always part of the plan. You know, everybody knows how people are going to react. So, you know, we just push it as far as we could go. But then also, stories that got bigger than we thought. I don't know if there are any stories that got bigger than we thought they were. I think every story was pretty much where we thought they'd be.
And I think talking to Mark Waid, it's funny, I'm going back and remembering all the conversations I've had with you, Greg, and Mark, and I haven't talked to Grant yet, but Super Chief was one of my, absolute great surprises. And what a great little interlude. With Super Chief. That was so much fun. Now, was that a Grant idea?
I think it started with Grant, yeah. I think it did. A lot of our, and, you know, Grant said this before, you know, he offers a lot more than big ideas, but he is really, really good at big ideas.
Well, and Booster, I remember in our first talk about 52, you said, wow, we just spent an entire day talking about Booster Gold.
Yeah.
Crazy. Do you feel that through the process of 52, you have an even better understanding of Booster Gold? Or is this just one of your guys from the 80s, because we know how much of a fan you were of those 80s DC comics, and was Booster among your favorite heroes?
He was. You know, I basically grew up with the Giffen-McGuire League, so mm-hmm. Booster and Beetle were I followed them pretty much up through the death of Superman when I was a kid, and I always loved those characters. But yeah, Booster Gold... I got more inside his head as we went, and I think everybody did, across the board, even though if I thought I already knew who Booster Gold was, I learned a little bit more about him through the process.
It's great to see Rip Hunter back and a viable character as well.
Yeah, he's kind of the straight man in the Booster Gold book.
That's cool.
You know, whereas Booster is, you know, we got Booster's ancestor, who was briefly Supernova, mm-hmm. who's kind of the everything, you know, he's I guess, not the Costello, but really is kind of the everything bad that Booster's inherited is from this guy, and then Rip Hunter is really the straight man in the group trying to get these two guys together, and Booster's in the middle, kind of wavering back and forth. You know, he did what he did, he saved the multiverse, and now, you know, we start off with Booster going, you know what, I did what I did, and now I'm ready for the big leagues, I'm ready to be an A-list hero. You know, his whole goal is to join the Justice League.
And the coolness of the multiverse being back opens up, as you said in your written interview, a lot of possibilities of different stories. And I imagine that Booster will, obviously being the keeper of the multiverse and the guy that's going to make things right, that's great. You're going to be able to revisit a lot of ideas that, you know, just through reboots and everything, maybe have been, you know, changed for the new Earth that's represented in the DCU. But it looked like in those final pages of 52, we saw all the old Charlton characters looking the way they did, you know, during the time when Dick Giordano was the editor of those characters and Steve Ditko, and those guys were cranking those books out.
Well, it's not exactly, I mean, yeah, it's partly that, you know, Booster Gold does deal more with time travel than travel through the multiverse, though.
Okay.
We'll touch upon that. But, and the Earths we saw, you know, they are, you do have the classic Charlton characters look, but the Earths and the things behind them and the ideals behind them aren't just going back to, hey, it's the, you know, it's the Charlton Earth. There are themes and events that happen on those, you know, on those Earths that make them different and hopefully new and a little bit updated.
I love the Freedom Fighters going after what looked like a Nazi version of the JLA.
Yeah, you should have heard Grant with his backstory on that Earth. That was great.
What else can you tell us about the Booster Gold series? It's great. I'm glad, as cool as it was to see Skeets go bad, I'm glad that someone saved a disc and you could reboot Skeets, and he's
yeah,
back
you like.
Right.
I mean, Skeets is a fun little Jiminy Cricket character for Booster Gold, and that's what his role is going to continue to be. He gets a little bit of an update, Booster Gold number one, as far as abilities go and insides go. But, Skeets is great. You got to have Skeets with Booster Gold.
Did you write that JLA cartoon with the Booster Gold episode?
No, I did not. I wrote one with Hawkman.
Okay, yes, and I remember the Hawkman one.
Yeah,
okay.
But I greatly enjoyed the Booster Gold one.
Yeah, it seems like everyone's got a great handle on what made Booster great, and that's why it's nice to see that, you know, the book is being reopened and you get a chance to see new Booster solo adventures. I know everyone's going to be bummed that Ted Kord can't be along for the ride, because that was the book that we all wanted to see. I know you're among those guys that wanted to see that blue and gold book.
Yeah, I really was looking forward. They had talked about it for years way back when. I was really looking forward to that.
Well, and it was, again, another nice nod at the end of 52 to see Ted and Booster back together again for one more time.
It's really interesting, the friendship that the guys created between those two characters really lasted this long. You know, it's something, you know, remember the Wonder Man Beast from Friendship from Avengers? Mm-hmm. I think it's even stronger than that. But these two characters, for some reason, they really appeal to people. They're two buddies.
So with Booster jumping around through time, are we going to see then the various eras of the DCU?
Yeah, I mean the goal is to go visit. Obviously, we've mentioned Jonah Hex and Sinestro when he was a Green Lantern, and mm-hmm. we'll see a few more familiar faces. Well, a lot of familiar faces like that. We'll also probably maybe step into the future a tiny bit, and we'll kind of go back and forth. But again, there's a very specific reason Booster Gold's recruited once again by Rip Hunter in issue one, and we kind of set up the entire engine for the series as we move forward in the first issue. The first issue is like 30 pages, so kind of like JSA, there was enough room to have some action and character and really get the entire premise and the purpose of the book and, of Booster Gold himself, what its role is in the DC universe, and set that all up for the monthly book.
Time paradoxes seem to be the current problem in the DCU. Not only with Booster Gold and what he's about to repair, but also the JLA-JSA Legion team-up that you're working on with Brad, or I should say is coming out now with Brad. How is that different, co-writing with Brad, than say, Kurt Busiek or Alan Heinberg?
Well, everybody, the guys I've co-written with, I love co-writing because I love talking story, and I love talking character, and I love figuring out why someone else would approach something differently, and learning from them and then collaborating with them and putting, all ideas together. And, working with Kurt on Superman was a joy. And working with Alan and, working with Jeff Katz on Booster Gold, it just makes a day more fun, bottom line. And it's not about ego. It's just about making a good comic book. So as long as I'm working with a writer who's, pure goal and their motivation is to come up with a great story, then I have fun with them. And Brad has been great to work with. It's been a little different with Brad and I because he obviously lives in Florida. He lives halfway across the country. Mm-hmm. Or he lives all the way across the country, halfway across the world, whatever. Brad and I talked quite a bit. We went over the story and broke down the characters and really figured it out. But the way the story's structured, it allowed us to kind of be able to write our own books and still, tie them in, and then we'd read each other's scripts and be able to go over and give some notes and polish them up and, make them link up together.
Well, this is just like reading a good Len Wein or Jerry Conway, 70s and
it's just supposed to be a fun team-up book and just with emotion behind it with, with some of the greatest characters in the DC Universe interacting. I really like, putting the new members of Justice Society together with the new members of Justice League. We've got Liberty Bell and Wonder Woman in issue 6 of JSA, which I really liked.
Cool.
Liked writing, and that to me is exciting. And Brad and I got really excited when we had the opportunity to, it just timed up right. He was doing Justice League, I was doing Justice Society. We've been dying to do this since we were, 8 years old. We want to see these characters team up, and it's fun to do the first kind of official, in quotes, crossover between the two books, because since they both have their own multi-titles. I can't believe that in the 87 issues of JSA, it never crossed over with Justice League.
Well, yeah, the Thanksgiving issues too, didn't you?
Yeah, but they never had, part one in JSA, part two in JLA.
That's true.
It just never timed out. We were supposed to do the Return of Hawkman was going to be a crossover, and then JLA was busy with the storyline, so we just did it ourselves, and it just never, we just never linked up with the books, and I don't know why exactly. I guess we're too busy trying to tell our own stories.
It's funny and interesting that you found a slightly new direction for the JSA, but in the case that you've always stressed, it's always been about family, and I just like this idea now of a true, as you say, society of superheroes, where really we're seeing, a DC nation of superheroes all interacting.
That's the whole point of the book, and I think the first four issues, especially the ending with the new Mr. America putting on that mask at the very end of the first four issues, really was what I wanted to say about the DC universe and about these heroes and what legacies really are. They're not they're not just sons and daughters. They're anybody who's going to pick up that symbol. And the whole point, if we're going to relaunch the book, is to refocus it and add something new to it and make it feel the same. Because I didn't think JSA was broken. It wasn't a broken book. Mm-hmm. there's no reason to blow it up and have, you know, kill a character and then have them come together because someone died or whatever. You know, rather than that, let's open it up and just say, we want to make this bigger. We kind of try to plant a flag in the ground with issue one and say, the world needs better good guys. That's the motto of the book. And that's what the book's all about, is recruiting in the new characters coming up and introducing a lot of new characters and trying to push personality as much as action. That's something I really intend to do, because JSA would tend to get up in really high concept, heavy, you know, action-oriented plots, and I did want to bring a focus back on character, specifically characters that you couldn't find anywhere else. There's nobody else like Starman.
Yep.
You know, I don't think there's anybody else like Cyclone. And the relationship between, you know, Tommy and Wildcat, that's something else that I don't know if there's a father-son relationship like that in comics. And that's what we wanted to do. You know, when we introduce Citizen Steel and get to him and who he is and what his backstory is and how he comes out of it, I don't think there'll be a character like him either. You know, we're not just putting Citizen Steel in there because I like his costume. You know, I do like his costume, but there's a reason to have that character in there. And every character we've got in there, Damage even, you know, everybody in there, we want in there for a reason. So we brought in, you know, our mainstays, and there was no reason to kick out, you know, anybody. You've got to have J.A. and Alan and Ted.
Yep.
But bring in really a new generation. If we're going to say, hey, this is all about teaching the new generation, let's see the new generation. Because Stargirl's been in there for 87 issues. So
right.
She's not really a new generation. She's a new generation, but she's experienced. She's a vet now. And same thing with Our Man and Mr. Terrific,
mm-hmm.
whose popularity has grown immensely over the last several years. And so the whole goal with relaunching the book was to say, if the story is called The Next Age, let's see that next age. And we'll continue to do that, you know. For me, it's a little bit like, it's got a little bit of the X-Men in there where, you know, you introduce new characters a lot. It's okay to have a lot of new characters show up, but we're going to really explore those characters that we do introduce.
And they have these immediate ties to the past as well, which I think does make them more relatable. And maybe as a reader, at least for me, it's more accepting. You know, it's funny, I was never a big Yolanda Montez fan.
Right.
And I'm really glad to see Tommy as this new Wildcat. And it's great to see Tommy and Ted, you know, be this father and son. And Ted Grant, certainly the last guy in the world you ever expect to be a father, I think, next to Ollie Queen. And it's great that it does. It opens a new dimension for the Golden Age Wildcat, and now we've got his son to deal with.
Yeah, and really it's not about, you know, having Ted Grant hang up that costume, because he never will. No, he never will. And it's about him finding a different role. If he's in the JSA and he wants to teach guys how to fight, it's about him finding a different role. And now he's really... You know, that's why we stressed, again, I stressed in issue one, Alan and Jay really are the father figures, and Ted's like, whatever. So pushing Ted into that father figure role and forcing him to look at it and say, really, Ted, do you really not want to be a father figure? Is there something that you're just not confronting? Is that paternal instinct really gone? And it's not. And introducing Tommy as somebody who's not, you know, I hate you because you weren't there. He's more of like, hey, I get it, Dad, you're busy. You're an important guy. You didn't know about me. No big deal. But... You know, he has his own secrets, and really, if he has a chance to bond with his father, he's going to take it. So those two characters, like, for me, they help represent, just like Mr. America, the new Mr. America at the end, helps represent an element of the book. You know, Wildcat and Tommy really represent another element of the book, is, you know, with the next generation working alongside the older generation.
And Cyclone, it seems beyond her being the new young girl, she really is almost the fan that shows up and then really has that fan perspective of, wow, how do I speak to these people?
Totally fangirl. And I don't know if we have a fangirl character in comics to this extent. I'm not sure. There probably is another one out there, but I like to think that we made the first one. but who knows? And also the more important thing is having female legacy show up, you know, with Mahunkle as the first Red Tornado and Cyclone coming in, and then Liberty Bell, you know, Libby Lawrence, and having
yes.
Jesse Chambers step up into that. Into that role, is I really wanted to see some female legacies represented there as well.
And I hope my uncle has a chance to kind of show that she's still got it if, you know, something happens or whatever, because I always appreciated the stories where, you know, especially the more modern stories, where there was some dignity to her character, and I think you showed that as well in that great Thanksgiving story that
Thanks.
You did.
Yeah, that was a Christmas issue.
That's what it was,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that was a really, really fun issue to write. I remember we got a lot of letters saying that was too sweet. We followed that up with Black Rain, so I think we balanced out those scales.
You sure did.
But But yeah, she's a terrific character, and Dale does bring a level of dignity to her. If you see her, you know, she used to wear kind of an apron and be a little bit more rough around the edges in JSA, and Dale's kind of, you know, gave her a business suit and cleaned her up a little bit, and she's definitely a, you know, she's more than a quote-unquote maid of the headquarters. She's, you know, she's Jarvis, like in Avengers,
sure.
Or I don't know if Jarvis isn't even in Avengers anymore, but she's the caretaker of the entire Brownstone and the team itself.
I wanted to ask about Dale Eaglesham.
Dale, you know, you got to look at JSA and say, oh, I've heard a lot of people say it's been reinvigorated, and I feel reinvigorated on the book and the approach that I take on the book. But that that reinvigoration comes with Dale Eaglesham, who brings an entirely new look to this book and a new approach to the characters. And it all comes down to emotion. And he drew issue, I think it was 81 of JSA, before the book ended,
mm-hmm.
that I wrote. It was my last issue I wrote. It was a Stargirl issue with Liberty Bell and everything else. And the emotional, I got the pages back, and the emotional beats that I strive to hit, he knocked out of the park. And that's when, you know, he was going to be the monthly guy on this book. And that's when I knew, okay, emotion is this guy's strong point, which is fantastic, because that's where I wanted to go with the characters. And so what he does is he brings a level of complexity to these guys. The Starman body language, you got to look at every time you look at Starman and he's saying something, his body language is very, very specific. And, you know, Dale sells it. He sells everything that I'm trying to accomplish with the script. And then, you know, he takes the script and he's the director and he enhances it. And I think we make a really, really great team on this book. I'm very happy to work with him on it. And he's been nothing short of amazing. His work on... You know, we have an issue spotlighting Citizen Steel a bit, and the stuff I've seen so far is just incredible.
The teases that you guys provided at the end of that first issue, there's lots of arcs in there. And
yes.
How long will it take before we see all those arcs?
Well, we kind of paid two of them off already.
True. Yeah. In fact, the most recent issue, we saw who we thought was maybe Booster Gold standing next to Batman. It turns out, obviously, it was Geo-Force.
Yeah, Geo-Force, who I've kind of written as an arrogant prick, and he gets a little bit more so in the next issue of Justice Society, just because I didn't have a real handle on Geo-Force. I always liked him, but I only liked him because I remember him from when I was a kid. I didn't really know anything about him.
Okay.
Which I think is a fair excuse for a lot of us. There's a lot of characters that we gravitate towards or like because we remember them when we were kids. And so when I saw Geo-Force, you know, Brad had been kind of playing him a little bit more aloof, so I just kind of compounded upon that and said, hey, he's a prince, you know, he's going to get in there and really, you know, he's on the Justice League, he's working alongside them. He's arrogant, and he's a little bit full of himself, but at the same time, he's got to be so self-conscious, because the first time people walk into a room with the Justice League sitting down, they're going to look at Geo-Force and go, what's he doing here? And he knows that, so he's overcompensating a bit at the same time. As, you know, he honestly does think he's a little bit, you know, his mud doesn't stink.
But apparently it does, because who said that he smells
Starman
like mud?
Starman does, but that's Starman says you smell like mud. But that's Starman's way of saying, shut up. Starman calls everything out the way it is, and there's a nice scene between Starman and Superman in an upcoming issue that I'm really, really proud of, because it's Starman thinks he's making so much sense, and he's desperately trying to communicate with his old friend Superman, and Superman just can't understand him, and it's frustrating for both of them. And it's really kind of a fun scene, but it's also a little bit sad.
Let's build on that, because that was one of my favorite scenes in the most recent issue of JSA, is all the statues of the Legion in this fortress. You tease that as well in the Action Annual, mm-hmm. but it was great to hear Superman look at them and with that smile say, these were my friends.
Yeah, they were. Every one of them could fly. That's my favorite line in the book. Every single one of them could fly, and I think we were going to use this Legion, and the key really was, what's the emotional connection to these characters? Why should we care about these characters? And if the best and greatest superhero in the DC universe says these were my friends when I was a kid, I get it. You know.
Yeah.
And you know, he looks at Cyclone and Stargirl and he says, "You're lucky. When I was your age, nobody." And nobody else could fly.
Right.
And you kind of get hit by that. And I got hit by that even when it came out of Superman's mouth and said, you know, he's totally right. Like, he was completely alone. So what a wonderful discovery to find out all these other kids that were like you, quote-unquote like you, aliens from other worlds coming to Earth. You know, and they were like him a lot more than you might think, because on the outside you say, oh, he's Krypton, but really, you know, Cosmic Boys from Brawl, and you have Lightning Lad from all these other guys coming in from, they're all aliens.
Uh-huh.
Except for a handful of them.
Right.
Like Colossal Boy and stuff.
Karate Kid.
Yeah, Karate Kid. But really, you know, you got a lot of aliens like him kind of migrating toward Earth to become something, part of something. But yeah, that scene in there was really important, and I felt it was important for readers who had never heard of the Legion of Superheroes, and you know, why should they care about the Legion of Superheroes? And I was hoping that scene would really put it in a context that was accessible to somebody who'd never really gotten into Legion yet.
Well, and I don't know where this story is going to go, and if this is the same Legion that is in the 31st century, if you're able to say that or not. But I like what Mark was doing. I look forward to what Tony Bedard is going to do when he takes over.
Yeah, Mark. I mean, Mark's, you know, he's worked on it twice now, I guess.
Yes.
I just think he's Mark's one of my favorite writers in comics, and you know, his take on things is just it's, you know, it's always the, I think people mistakenly label him a Silver Age guy when actually he's always doing something brand new, and he just knows the core concept of the hero, so you recognize the characters, and that's something that I try and pick up from him, because he goes to the core of what that hero is, and then he spins it to something new and different. And a lot of what he's done on Legion has inspired me on JSA. It's like, well, look at the way he looks at Phantom Girl or this character or whatever, and has kind of changed their outlook and still stayed true to the core of the character, and that's what I think he's done so well.
My concern always was with the Legion, and I liked when Abnett and Lanning were working on it as well.
Great book.
Really, really, every recent decision that I think DC has done with the Legion have always been very interesting, but at the core, it's that tie to Superman that was always there. And once, you know, Crisis happened, I think the Legion has kind of lost its way. There was no anchor and everything. And that's why it was great when Mark threw Supergirl in the future.
Yep.
And I'm glad to see that in action, and now in Justice Society and in this team-up, you're acknowledging, no, Superman knew the Legion. Whatever stories will come of it beyond what you've shown in your annual and what you're showing right now in the team-up, it's nice to see that Superman is really part of the Legion again.
Yeah, and you know, you'll see some more stuff coming up. And we'll get into that in a second. You see, that's the fun of it. Is like, that's why I like, look at X-Men. People are like, oh, X, you know, JSA is impenetrable. Look at X-Men.
Well, oh, yeah. Well, the Legion is the same way. And it's funny. I think I'm that last generation that chose between the Legion and the X-Men, and I went with the Legion.
Yeah, you know, the Legion used to be such a huge book, and I strongly believe it because it was like X-Men.
Absolutely it was. And you had just as many characters, no question.
And that's what. And X-Men's not appealing because it's cool and edgy. It's appealing because it is cool and edgy, but also there's a shitload of characters. So you get to pick out who you want. As a kid, you love lots of characters because everybody, you know, what happens is when we're adults, I don't know if you're recording this or not, but...
You're all right, don't worry.
You can record this part.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, when we're adults, we I think adults like to put rules on stuff and limit stuff, and so they're not as accepting. They want to understand every little thing. But as kids, you want a million Green Lantern Corps members. You can go, wow, who's that guy? And X-Men, you look at X-Men, you're like... You know, all these characters, who's your favorite? Colossus, my favorite. I like Iceman. Oh, Iceman's an X-Factor, and you know, whatever. And you follow these characters. It's just like Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
You know? You're right.
And action figures. You just, as a kid, you absorb a lot of knowledge, and you look at stuff and just, you accept it for what it is. You don't need to be, you know, told every little thing. You don't get confused that easy because you just are along for the ride of life and learning about everything and trying to take everything in. And like, you look at JSA, and there's a lot of characters, a lot of history there, but so that there is on X-Men, there is on Avengers, there is on Spider-Man, all these villains, all that's listed as villains, who are your favorite villains? And that's why I strongly believe in opening the doors and taking the chains off and like, let's, you know, and it's something that I think, especially for the DC universe, is no rules. Like, there are, obviously you want continuity and you want characters to act like characters, you know. But open it up and let's tell stories and let's let the imagination just kind of, you know, if you can find the emotional connection to this, then do it. If there's a great emotional story in there, then let's tell that story within, you know, the rules, and I use that in quotes, of, you know, how the who the characters are, to stay true to them and how they would react and everything else. But, you know, the other thing I was going to say about the Legion, too, is one of the connections to Superman, I think, is that, you know, you watch a movie and you follow a certain character, and you follow that character because the story's happened to them. So why are we peering into the 31st century? What's special about this superhero team? You know, and that superhero team, well, it has ties to Superman and Supergirl.
Is that all going to tie together? I mean, we've got Legionnaires out of time in the 21st century.
Yeah,
we've got,
you'll have to keep reading.
All right, fair enough. Let's talk about action for a second because, man, the stuff with Donner has been great, and I love Kubert's art. I'm sorry that we're going to be delayed in terms of it wrapping up.
Yeah, me too. You know, it's a shame, and I'll let Adam talk more about it. But I am very proud of the issues we've done so far, extremely proud of that annual. I know we talked about it last time. Really happy with what we've got coming up.
It's great, Jeff, because I think, again, looking at this team up with the JLA and Legion and with what you're doing in action, I think there's a real acceptance now, and it looks like DiDio is the guy that maybe greenlit all this, or all of the editors and all the writers sat down. And it's funny, in that post-crisis world, there seemed to be such an emphasis of, you know, Superman's backstory and Kandor and all the other Kryptonians, that's too complicated. Let's just strip it down. And maybe that was the right decision for its time. But it's nice to see that a generation later, you guys can pick up things like that, dust them off, give them new energy, give them a new focus, and show that there was nothing wrong with there being more than one Kryptonian out there. It's your retelling of the Mon-El story in the Action Annual was fantastic. And it's great. It's nice to see these things that made Superman fun back in the book, and that we've got new stories to look forward to.
Yeah, I there's a time for everything, and just like I really emphasize in Green Lantern in the comics themselves and the characters acknowledge it, is that, you know, when Kyle Rayner picked up that ring and he was the last Green Lantern and we call him the Torchbearer, he really did hold the mantle, because at that point Green Lantern wasn't doing well. People weren't coming to Green Lantern. It was not a franchise that was thriving. And so Kyle Rayner did really help carry that torch. And there's a time for everything. And there was a period of time when, you know, maybe it was better to have one Green Lantern and have a last Green Lantern struggle to figure out where he was and what was going on. And then, you know, you do build it back up. And you do bring in back the Green Lantern core and everything that comes with it. Because I do think Green Lantern you need the core. I mean,
sure.
You know, but there is a time for everything. And I think that's similar with Superman, is that why not, you know what, if you don't like Kandor, you don't need to read the Kandor story. You know, if you don't, you know, there's certain elements like that, you don't need to read. If you don't like Bizarro World or the idea of a lot of Bizarros, you don't need to read the story. But I think to take that stuff off the shelves and lock it away is a mistake. And that's part of the emphasis is why we brought the multiverse back, is because I think taking things off the shelf is a mistake. It's like, let any kind of story be told. And that really with Superman is like, he's got so many great facets to his character, and so many great, the Fortress of Solitude is loaded. We did that spread in the annual, and that
yeah.
was my favorite thing in the annual, just because you could see little touches of, you know, all these adventures he had, tons of adventures, and Superman should have those adventures across time and space, and that's what Superman is. And I think the bigger we can make that, and the more we can bust it wide open, the better.
How is Richard Donner reacting to the Bizarro stuff? And it sounded like he was fascinated by it when you first mentioned.
Yeah, we kind of, you know, we played around Bizarro and changed a little bit of it. Tried to take, I guess, a different approach to Bizarro World and what it's like, or how Bizarro behaves on it, especially.
Okay.
And what Superman's doing there. And there's one really fun scene I like that a bunch of Bizarros tackle Superman and they smash into the ground, and then they actually smash. They're on the corner of the Earth, so they actually smash up into the water, up into the ocean, and you really get this weird disorientation where Superman has no idea where he is because the planet's so messed up. It's a lot of fun.
Eric Powell is going to be doing the Bizarro art.
Yeah, his work is terrific too. It just looks dynamite.
When are we going to see you and Donner back? What month does the action stuff pick up again?
The Eric Powell stuff is three issues, and I think two of them ship in September.
Okay.
And then the third issue ships in October, and Gary Frank starts in the end of October.
Tell us about Gary Frank joining Action Comics.
He's coming on. He's ready to go. I've talked with Gary over the years. He's an amazing artist. I've been a fan of his forever, ever since Hulk days and Supergirl
sure.
and all that stuff. And he and I worked briefly on Avengers. We did two issues together and really got along and kind of connected on a creative level. So we just kind of kept in touch. And this, you know, this came about. We were talking, and it just everything fit into, you know, the timing was right for all of us. And the great thing about Gary, I mean, he's already well underway, and the stuff is beautiful. His first arc, I don't think I'm allowed to announce the title of it yet, but it does kind of continue on from the JLA-JSA crossover, so okay. That should give you a hint. I'm really, really excited about it. But his take on Superman and Jimmy and Lois is just phenomenal. And he's in for the long haul, which is nice.
How long is Richard Donner on for the long haul?
The first arc by Gary's doing, I'm writing solo, and okay. You'll see why. You'll see why when we announce it. And then he's coming back for the arc after that, which actually we're building up to a story between Superman and Action for Gary's second arc. And he'll be on it, you know, he'll be on it for as long as he wants to be on it.
That's cool. And So Kurt will be writing that crossover story as well?
Yeah, he'll be on Superman, and we'll probably talk more about that, I guess, in the next few months.
That's fine. Okay. I know convention season is coming, so yep. We'll hold those stories until later in the summer, and I'll get you and Kurt back, and we can flesh out more. Tell me, you guys wrote Up, Up, and Away together, Kurt.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys had a chance to have many other discussions about the direction of the character? Or...
Oh, yeah, we talk quite a bit. I mean... We both have our separate books, mm-hmm. and we have our separate, you know, we do have our separate direct takes, and they're separate things we do, but we do talk a lot about the character of Superman, the heart of Superman, and, you know, what's going on in his life between Lana and, you know, Chris Kent and Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen, all these characters, so we are in sync on that, and we're on the same page as far as tone goes, and characters go, so we do really keep in communication, and we do want the books to feel, you know, we wanted to start off by telling our own stories, and then we're bringing the books in together in the beginning. They're going to be a little bit more closely, not, I guess, linked, but they won't, you know, won't directly cross over to each other all the time, but they will be more closely linked. And we do want to, because the things that we're going to be introducing in Superman, like you said, open up the mythology. We want to introduce a few new big pieces, just like Kandor, the Legion of Superheroes, Bizarre World. We want to introduce new pieces to that now. And we've got one big one coming toward the end of the year, beginning of next year.
Glad to see all the multi-kryptonites seem to be back, as evidenced in the annual.
Yeah, Metallo's going to have a lot of fun with those. I look forward to that, actually.
Nice to see there's enough room in the chest cavity to hold all
that
stuff.
Yeah, he's actually, you know, he resisted it at first, but once he gets going, he's going to enjoy them quite a bit. And again, that's more, you know, let's have fun with it.
Sure.
You don't have to, it's not going to be goofy, but it can be fun. You know, there's a fine line to walk, but I think we can walk it.
That's excellent, man. And so there is going to be another annual coming out.
There will be, you know, I don't know, like Adam, the finale to Last Sun will be in an annual, or it'll be labeled, you know, Action Comics Last Sun Special Number 1.
I see.
You know, whatever the title's, I guess, to be determined, so we'll see.
Okay, because I was wondering if there were going to be any other little, you know, stories, much like you did in the first annual.
If we do an annual like that, absolutely, because I really like doing those short stories. Donna and I had fun breaking them down, and getting stuff like the Fortress of Solitude or you know, the Mon-El origin, the General mm-hmm. Zod non-origin, even having fun little stories introducing Colors of Kryptonite and Lex Luthor and the ways to kill Superman. All that stuff is fun. It's fun stuff.
And I'm really glad you guys did shoehorn the movie backstory into the comics because... And it seems like there's almost elements of Smallville in there, too. And that sounds like that's the new attitude. If it's good, throw it in. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're being pretty, you know, we are having lots of conversations about what we're doing with the backstory. But, you know, again, introducing General Zod and Non, you know, we aren't just doing the movie. We're obviously adding something new to it with Non's backstory
you
and everything
bet.
Else. And I think you need to do that. We can't just, you know, reprint the movie on the comic or anything like that. But people, you know, the bottom line is... People are most familiar with that look, with crystals, and mm-hmm. With the crystal technology of Krypton, because they've seen it in all these movies over the years.
Sure,
they know who General Zod is more than they know who Brainiac is, and so why not tap into that stuff? Let's try and make Superman as relatable to many readers as we can.
Well, and Non, especially after Richard Lester's cut of the film came out, was this kind of wacky character, and you know you've given him this amazing backstory where. It makes sense. I was talking to Tom Caters from Around Comics, another podcast, and he said, you understand why these three people hate Jor-El and would hate Superman, and much like Black Adam, the best villains are the ones where you can totally relate and understand where they're coming from, and I think you've provided that now with the three Phantom Zone rejects.
I completely agree, and now when you look at Non, he's not just, oh, he's a goofy mute. He's got tragedy to him. You know?
Yes.
He's, you understand his pain and frustration, and also you look at him and like, wow, that guy taught Jor-El. He taught Superman's dad, and now look what happened to him because one of the council members went too far.
Yeah.
You know, the council members weren't necessarily the nicest people in the world. And both Zod and Jor-El had the right idea. They just went about it different ways.
No, that's excellent, man, and I look forward to more with what's coming. Let's go to Green Lantern because a blast, and I'm enjoying the current Star Sapphire story. It's
yeah,
nice.
Daniel Kuhn is really a talent.
Yes, absolutely, it's gorgeous.
Yep.
It really is. It's nice that Carol is still a major part of Hal's life.
Yeah, we're having fun with that story. You know, it's kind of like the Sinestro Corps story is really really, you know, ball to the wall action. It's heavy, obviously, Sinestro, and, you know, it's not going to be a light story, quote-unquote light story. So we wanted to kind of have a fun little romp with Carol Ferris and Cowgirl and Hal Jordan before we got into the craziness of it all.
Well,
and it sets up some mythology that actually ties into the Sinestro Corps.
Very cool. I love the little backup stories of the Sinestro Corps.
Yeah, they've been really fun. Dave's been doing a nice job on them.
The my favorite Sinestro Corps moment, and I told you this in setting up the interview, was the Yellow Ring almost choosing Bruce Wayne. That was just genius.
Yeah, it was fun. It was funny.
Well, and there's a guy that, as the ring says, no, this is, you know, Batman, you know, instills fear. He is kind of the opposite of Hal Jordan.
Completely, and that's why they, you know, that's why they do have, and we try to emphasize that in Rebirth, obviously, that's why they do have a problem with one another is, Batman scares everybody, but Hal just sees this guy in a bat suit, and he likes Bruce Wayne, but he's just a guy in a bat suit, you know, to him, and it's no big deal. He understands that he scares people, but he doesn't know why.
And we're seeing Nathan's best work, and I'm sure he's going to be just churning out more. When how is this going to come out with the Sinestro Corps book? Is it going to be in Green Lantern, or is it its own separate special? Or
well, you're going to see the special comes out at the end of June.
Okay,
that really kind of. It's the opening battle of the Sinestro Corps War, and that sets everything up. And there's a lot more in it, I think, than people expect, and a lot more going on than people expect, which I'm happy about. And that's I think it's a 54-page book, and then that goes into Green Lantern, which will be, you know, the main Sinestro Corps story with Green Lantern Corps, and it'll build up to 25, issue 25. Ivan Reese is going to be doing that, and you know he's killing on it right now.
That's
and I'm
really
sure
cool.
Everybody who's seen his work obviously knows what a genius he is. You know, the goal to this is kind of like if Rebirth was Star Wars, this is our Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
Like, that's always been our mindset. It's like, I want to do the Empire Strikes Back of Green Lantern. We did Star Wars, Hal Jordan the back. It's great. Let's do Empire Strikes Back. So this is going to be a harder day for them. And we'll eventually, hopefully, build up to a Return of the Jedi type without the Ewoks.
Very cool. And I know sitting in a cube somewhere is the Superboy Prime.
Oh, right, yeah, he's on Owen right now.
Yeah, so I
almost
know.
Forgot.
Oh, there you go. Well, I don't know when that's going to pop, but obviously that storyline is dangling eventually to be dealt with.
Yep.
I mean, you know, so that we look forward to that. Tell me about what you're doing when you're not writing comics as much as you can. I know one thing you've got in the works is a Metal Men screenplay.
Actually, I'm the executive producer of the Metal Men movie.
Wow.
With Lauren Shuler Donner. And Eric Champanelle is writing the movie right now, which is cool. But I can't say much more about it, except it does feature, obviously, the Metal Men, and it does feature them in their classic forms, and Doc Magnus, and it's very, very true to, I think, the heart of the comic book and what it's all about. And I'm very excited to be a part of it, but it's something that I've talked to Lauren for years, and we finally found a writer who has the perfect take, and you know, Warner Brothers liked it, and it's set up, and here we go. So hopefully we'll get it rolling very soon.
And the CGI technology now is good enough that we can get good
Completely,
looking.
Completely, yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's the best. You know, again, that's the best part about it is that the technology is there to make it work.
Were you able to write much in 52 of those Metal Men stories? I mean, you know, how much?
I don't know if I did. God, that was Grant really taking point on that, and his take on the Metal Men's freaking genius. But those little guys were awesome. I don't think I wrote too much Metal Men in there.
Well, let's talk about a guy I know you did write in 52. And actually, I could have brought it up earlier, but we could spend hours talking about Black Adam.
Black Adam.
What a great arc, man. You know, and right down to his last shot of walking in those alligator
boots. I forget whose suggestion that was, because I remember we were talking, and God, who was it? I don't know where it came from. That maybe came from me, and I don't remember it. But I do remember... that last epilogue and that last shot with the crocodile boots, I just think makes it
And also, I enjoyed him in issue 50 just walking around muttering all the different words, trying to figure out what the new
Yeah, I was really proud of 50. We all jammed on 50, and I thought it was a really nice nice ending to that battle.
And a great Captain Marvel moment where he could, like, really solve it.
Lightning, yeah.
Yeah, and also, I just, again, the guy reaches out to his brother with compassion of, what can I possibly do to help you get over this hurt?
Yeah.
And obviously Black Adam would have nothing, you know, from him, but it was just, it was great. There's Captain Marvel still trying to be the good guy and saying, hey, man.
Yep, and you know what? Next time he sees him, he probably do the same thing.
Sure.
He understands him more than almost anybody else. And I think that's, again, the tragedy of that villain. Like, I love these guys who really can relate to other heroes. Look at Hal and Sinestro. They're so, because of everything Hal went through, he's a better character for it. And a lot of people might get upset at that, but I think he's a better character for it. And you look at Sinestro, and that's why. Is now Hal has a villain who knows it. He knows exactly what it's like to fall and become a renegade. And Sinestro put him through this whole thing and says, you're just like me now. And I love that. There's a scene early on when Gantz says to Hal, you need to stand up and take charge. And Hal says, you know, you've asked two people to become, quote-unquote, the greatest Green Lantern ever, me and Sinestro, and we both busted.
Wow.
You know, and it's a real powerful scene, and I think it's a real powerful link between those two characters. And suddenly you have a hero who's much more complex than he used to be, but you still have the bravado and, you know, that cocky smile, because that's who Hal Jordan is. But he does have something that he's experienced that he shares with his archenemy. And I just think that's something really, really cool. And again, with Billy Batson, he sees, you know, his parents were murdered, ironically, by Theo Adam. And he can see, you know, how that rage and how that vengeance and how that hate would eat you up. And Black Adam has let that do it to himself. And the tragedy of it all is seeing this wonderful family start to form, and Black Adam actually almost becoming on the same level as Billy Batson and really helping people. He believes in helping people no matter what, and then bam, he just loses it all. And, you know, all that hate, all that pent-up frustration, everything that he was comes just flooding back in, and he loses it. You know, and now he's walking around going, what the hell am I doing? Where do I go from here?
Was there ever a thought of, you know, do we want to kill Osiris? Do we want to kill Isis? They are great characters.
There was some thought because, you know, originally Isis was always going to die.
Okay.
Osiris and Sobek I came up with, I think, a little bit later on. But in the very first meeting we had Isis, who was always going to die. We always knew Black Adam's story. It was, you know, the fall from grace, the tragedy, because that's who that character is.
And, certainly.
You know, not everybody's going to have a happy ending in 52, because then it wouldn't give you the variety of stories you wanted. So we always knew Black Adam would have a tragedy like that. So there was a point where I was like, oh, do we really need to kill her? Because I really grew to like her character, and I just like Isis in general, and I grew to like her character. But at the end of the day, it was what we set out to do. It was the story, and we built her up so much. The fact that I didn't want to do it, you know, meant, okay, you know, hopefully readers will feel it when his family starts to get ripped apart. And I think they did.
Well, and I also know, and I can't remember when, but in Titans, I remember seeing Osiris.
Yeah.
And I forget at what point, if it was after 1 year later or before in the future story.
Yeah, it was 1 year later. He was,
okay.
He was listed on as a former member, and he was a former member.
That's cool.
Poor kid.
We hardly knew ye.
I know. No, that scene was vicious.
Man, well... And, you know, it's Vanetta asked you this, too. Is there ever any thought of a Black Adam miniseries?
Well, you know, Peter Tomasi and Doug Monke are doing a Black Adam miniseries. And
okay.
I'm obviously a big fan of Pete. I've worked with him for a long time, so I'm anxious to see what they do. I don't have any input into it, but I'm very anxious to read it. There was a point where they were asking me about doing a Black Adam book, and I felt like I'd worked with this character for so long on JSA and then for so long on 52. That you know, I wanted to take a little bit break, and I felt that he had really gotten a spotlight, and people knew who he was and understood him, and there were a lot of Black Adam fans now, and I that's all I want, is I want people to be fans of these characters. Like, I want people to see Captain Cold and the Rogues and go, oh, I love the Rogues. You know, I want them to see Booster Gold and say, oh, I really like Booster Gold, and take those characters, like I was talking about Geo Force earlier, characters that I might like, just, you know, I might see something in them that appeals to me and see if I can crack that open and share it with people and to see if they like the character, see if they respond to that. So when Black Adam, you know, at the end of 52, they're talking about Black Adam book, I just didn't have too much interest in it right now. And, maybe someday I'll go back to Black Adam. But right now I wanted to kind of try something new, which is why I think I started to gravitate towards Booster Gold. And, I started just getting ideas for a Booster Gold book and a book that was a little more humorous and a little bit more, you know, crazy and totally different than anything else I was doing.
So you must be relieved after Infinite Crisis and 52 to, you know, be able to focus on the books that you do and not have to worry about the big picture much.
52 was never, I guess we're just really naive. We're like, oh, it's four of us. Well, no problem. It'll be another monthly book. And it turned into, obviously everyone probably has heard us moan and groan by now how much work it turned into. So I won't repeat it again. But, it is nice to focus in on my monthly books and get the laser beam in on JSA and Green Lantern and Action and, Booster Gold with Jeff Katz and Dan Jurgens. I'll work with those guys. It is nice to kind of take a breather and, I do stuff outside comics as well. And so it's nice to have my weekends back. but I'm really excited to keep working. I mean, I love comic books and I love these characters and, I'm really anxious for Booster Gold to come out. I hope it's going to surprise people. We got a lot to live up to with the way he was presented in 52, but I think we can do it. And I think we got something new to say about him, even still, which is cool.
Are you able to talk any more about that project you had in the works with the Robot Chicken guys?
Yeah, it's called Naughty or Nice. It's stop motion animation. I'm writing and directing and producing with Matt Senreich. And who's co-created Robot Chicken with Seth Green, who's another producer on the project. Working on the script and got a couple puppets built. I can't say much more than that, though.
Okay. So no release date anytime soon?
No, nothing I can talk about.
Okay. Is Blade ever going to come out on DVD?
I just did commentary with David Goyer for the pilot, actually.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, last week. It was really fun to go back and look at that.
Excellent. Dude, I'm telling you, I really enjoyed that series, and I understand it kind of clunked through, but that's a typical first season. No first season is perfect.
No, I was really proud of, the last five episodes. I thought the last five episodes is when everybody, the actors and the line producers and the stunt guys and the directors and the writers, all of us really got into gear, and I really, really liked those last five. I think they're really good, but that's the way it goes. Look, Stars and Stripes was my first book, and it got canceled, and everything worked out okay.
It sure did. Yeah,
so we'll keep plugging away, and you know what? Comics are my first passion and my first love. So, as long as I'm playing around with comics, I'm completely happy.
Are you reading Mark Guggenheim on Blade and Marvel?
I haven't read the last few issues, but I did read the first few.
Gotta tell you, man, it's a great series.
Mark's
a
good writer.
You know, well, and it's unfortunate, man. Marvel just can't. You know, it's a shame.
Yeah, I guess Blade's never really, they had three movies now too in a short-lived series, and I guess Blade really has never been able to support a monthly book for very long. It is a shame.
Definitely.
He's a great character. He's one of Marvel's best characters, actually, but I credit the movies, Marv Wolfman and Gene Colan. They did a great job in introducing him, but I credit the movies for really fleshing him out and delivering him to a widespread audience.
No, and I love that one origin story that you guys did, too, in the series.
Oh, yeah, with Richard Roundtree.
Yes.
Yes.
Very cool.
That was a good episode.
You bet, man. One day we've got to sit down and talk about your Marvel work, Jeff. I always want to spend time talking about your current work and everything, but never get the time to really sit down and talk to you about the Avengers and some of the stuff you did over at Marvel.
Yeah, it was such a quick flash of light, it feels like, that I was over there. It was a fairly good experience, but... But yeah, there are characters over there that would be really fun to get into, like Spidey and Hulk, and the X-Men. But who knows?
How long are you locked up over at DC? And I don't mean it in a negative way.
No, I'm there for several more months. So.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Oh wow. All right. Man, everyone's contract is coming up. Wow.
Uh-oh.
Exactly.
I think everything will work out fine.
I'm sure it will.
Yeah.
Dude, nice going, as I always tell you, because you're one of my favorite writers, and I truly, you provide a great voice to these characters and give them new energy. Congratulations, and keep it up, man.
You know, it's all, it's, again, it's all about, for me, is I really want to try and show other people what I like about these characters. And if other people say, you know, I like the Justice Society, and they, if more people say they like the Justice Society now than they did 10 years ago, my job's, you know, that's my job's done. If more people are, you know, enjoying Green Lantern or getting hooked on the Green Lantern mythology, you know, new readers getting hooked on the Green Lantern mythology, then, you know, then that's, you know, my job's success when it comes to dealing with these, you know, these characters in the DC universe. Is I want people to, yeah, I want Booster Gold to move up people's favorite character list.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah. So that's the goal.
Well, I hope you reach that one, and maybe we'll see Booster Gold hit the top 10 like your other books and everything. So
we'll see. But it is very it's actually got quite a good wicked sense of humor. We make fun of quite a few people, including everything I've worked on.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, got to have a sense of humor, my friend.
Very cool. Well, keep it up, man, and thanks again for talking to me. And once the announcements come out, you know I'm going to be bugging you at the end of the summer to do it again.
Look forward to it, John.
It's always a pleasure kicking back and having a conversation with a guy like Jeff Johns. Make sure you check out Action Comics, co-written with Richard Donner, the Justice Society of America, the upcoming Booster Gold series, and, of course, Green Lantern, all from DC Comics. Word Balloon is brought to you by MailOrderComics.com. Today's comics at yesterday's prices. If you've liked them before, check them out today. They've got all new 75% discounts on your pre-ordered new releases and more 50% discounts than ever before. That coupled with their unmatched ordering system and the best customer service to be found yet. Mail Order Comics wants to be your subscription service for all your comic book and related items. Every month you'll enjoy standard discounts of 38% on large press and up to 38% on all small press publishers. They've added double the specials with discounts of 50% or more. That's right, twice as many DC Image and Marvel Monthly specials. Plus, they like to allow the chance for collectors and comic enthusiasts to try new titles without paying a lot. For all the details, go to mailordercomics.com. Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntress reminding you that Word Balloon is all over the internet. If you're not already doing it, make sure you subscribe to the iTunes Word Balloon feed. Not only can you find our Word Balloon episodes at newsarama.com, but check us out at our MySpace page, myspace.com/wordballoon. Our comicspace.com/wordballoon page, and all the various podcatcher sites like Podcast Alley, Podcast Pickle, Odeo, you name it. If you have any questions, I can be reached via email, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2007.